Enchanted Sky Media.
This is Code 3, the podcast for firefighters. Now, here's your host, Scott Orr.
Thanks for joining me again this week. Today we're talking about recruiting volunteers. My guest is retired Chief Robert Relag. He spent more than 30 years as a chief officer in various departments and was the fire marshal for the state of Ohio. Now, most chiefs will tell you there's a serious shortage of people willing to volunteer these days. And yet, around 70% of firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers. Relag has a lot of experience finding, recruiting, and retaining volunteer firefighters, and he says it's still doable. Robert Relag, thanks for being on Code 3 this week.
Thanks, Scott. A pleasure being here.
I'll get the ball rolling by telling you that the Volunteer Firefighter Association here in Arizona has disbanded because they can't get enough members. One of our fire chiefs who used to supplement his career staff with the volunteers says that's just a sign of the times. What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, there are probably some local issues with regard to volunteers, but in general, I think one of the problems that we have, and sort of away from the three things that I talk about with regard to recruitment, but I think that sometimes we do such a good job that the community doesn't realize that we're volunteers. And I think that's because we have raised the bar as far as professionalism, which is the correct thing to do, for volunteers, and we have placed a heavier burden on them as the years go on. We're not just firefighters anymore. We're actually, you know, there for EMS. We're there for technical rescues. We're there for auto accidents. We're there for, you know, search and rescue. All of those jobs that we have taken on are, you know, somewhat staggering. And I think one of the reasons why people believe that that the fire department or the fire service in general is all career and that there's not an opportunity for them you know, to serve their community. So that sort of goes into one of the first of the three things that I talk about, which is marketing.
So that would be a way to draw people into the tent, so to speak.
That's correct. The things that I talk about with regard to that can be as simple as putting a sign outside the station announcing that you're taking applicants. You know, there's sometimes in the fire service there's a stigma that you know, we can do it all and we don't need folks from you know, from the community to come help, or they'll do it by word of mouth or whatever. But you know, just as easy as a sign saying, you know, hey, you know, volunteers needed, you know, stop by or contact this number, is one way of doing it. But in today's social media, there's also things that can be done, such as having a web page or a Facebook page that, you know, helps promote the fact that the volunteer is part of the community and that, you know, more people are needed from that standpoint. In that, you can do everything from showing your monthly statistics. You know, maybe there's only a couple fires a month, but maybe you're doing dozens of EMS runs, either as a first responder, emergency medical service person, as an EMT or a paramedic. And it's that, you know, obviously grows in the volunteer sector, that then, you know, puts a greater burden on the individuals and should be spread out, hopefully, with more volunteers. You know, the use of pictures. Pictures tell a thousand words, as the old saying goes. And so, you know, if you have a fire or you have a bad auto accident, if it's possible to you know, to take, you know, some photos and put them on the web, you know, obviously not showing any particular thing of the victims because of the HIPAA situations, but just general overall situations of how it's been handled. You know, that makes, you know, a good impact on the people who may be looking either at your web page or your Facebook page. Obviously, making yourself aware to the local government, you know, those folks sometimes take you for granted as well. The department that I'm affiliated with right now, monthly, at trustees meetings, gives either certificates of appreciation, longevity awards, things of this nature that keep us in the forefront of the community. Again, that's part of marketing. Having, you know, the need broadcast in church bulletins, flyers, you know, putting up at some of the businesses around the community. You know, those are all good things that, you know, help create the idea that someone can serve their community through the fire service.
So once you get them in the door, and I know there are multiple ways to get them in the door, is it tougher for them to get all the training they need nowadays? How much of a problem is that for people once you get them to agree to do it?
Well, I would say that that's one of the other three things that, you know, that are there. One of the things that, you know, that you can do, you know, to help offset that, first off, is having, you know, interesting, or making younger folks interested in the fire service, perhaps through a cadet program, and then offer them training when your state believes that they're of age that they can start to take training. I'm old enough that when I first volunteered, I was 16. That was the way it was in the state of Ohio back then. If you didn't need a high school diploma or whatever to get the initial training as a volunteer. So I actually started in a department at the age of 16 and worked my way up through, you know, that. But training specifically can be a problem. Obviously, each state has a requirement for what level of fire service or what level of fire training that you're to have. Some states require volunteers to have the same training as a career person. Some have different requirements. Some only require a firefighter one. Initially in Ohio, there's what's called a firefighter 1A, which is an introductory firefighter who basically takes a 36 to 40 hour class and then is allowed to function in some degrees as a firefighter to augment those that have firefighter one or firefighter one and two training. A couple of the things that have come down the road most recently and have been developed primarily as ways of getting continuing education units are online courses. What we have to realize is that the younger generation that's out there are more used to taking things on computers than they are to reading textbooks and filling out workbooks as we may have traditionally done or as we are, you know, probably doing now in individual states. At least there's been some experimentation toward putting initial classes online where they can look at and as they go along work out the textbook side of that, you know, from reading online and then filling out, you know, a quiz online, and then having those groups come together, perhaps at a county level, for, you know, a couple sessions where the seasoned firefighters talk to them about the issues that they've supposedly gone over online, and then to do the practical side. You know, the actual raising of ladders, the hose lays, you know, the opportunities that they have for forcible entry, things of this nature. And then eventually getting to a point where there may be a controlled live burn from, you know, a burn building or, you know, a mobile, you know, fire lab that that some states may have and take around from state to state, and then having those folks sit for their state exam to be certified. So there is a direction in that for that to do some things more online when it's more convenient to the individual new recruit that you're trying to get through the door.
So there are those online opportunities nowadays, but the hands-on in-person training generally costs something, and I'm curious how, in your experience, volunteer departments pay for that. Do they have grants or what?
Well, I can only go for some of the states that I know of in the Midwest, so I'm going to take from my experience here in various departments around the Midwest. In this particular area, especially in volunteers, there are grants from some governmental organizations, either in case of Ohio, the State Fire Marshal's Office, and the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, that provide these classes at no cost on a county level for the fire service. And they also offer the opportunity to upgrade. So, for example, they may provide an instructor in a class for perhaps 25 folks in a county at no cost, and then maybe in a year's time come back and offer from the basic firefighter introductory course to a firefighter one upgrade, again at no cost, with that being provided through grants from the various state organizations. That is becoming also something that we're seeing throughout states in the Midwest. And the idea here is the investment, for example, that the Bureau of Workers' Compensation is making is that an adequately trained firefighter is not as likely to get hurt or as seriously hurt as one that, you know, is just learning on the job training. So what we look at is the cost benefit analysis, and at least in some of the states in the Midwest, they have gone to that more or less almost free, completely free training. Now that still has a cost for the department, because you have to provide the turnout equipment, things of this nature, for that individual. So there's always going to be a cost. But as far as actual training is concerned, we're seeing a growing trend towards some of the states either picking up all or part of that training cost.
So let's talk about the volunteer landscape in general. My understanding from talking to fire service professionals who actually work with volunteers is that the landscape has changed. People are not as willing to volunteer, or employers are not willing to give them the time off they used to. Do you find these to be factors, or is that exaggerated?
Well, I think it's always a factor, but I think education is one of the things that, you know, that we need to do, either through marketing or community outreach or whatever. Number one is, I really don't think that a lot of the younger folks realize, again, as I have said previously, that the fire service or a fire and EMS is being provided by volunteers. So I think getting that word out is there. The second thing is that some of the folks that are out there may or may not be wanting to be, you know, a full-fledged firefighter. But I am a true believer that there's always a job for everyone in a volunteer department. That person may be the person who volunteers to take care of the run reporting or the books, of how the money is being spent. Or, you know, even in my experience, I've had folks that are close to retirement age that have, every time, you know, that there was a fire in the community, would come down and would provide child care service at the station in a special controlled room that basically allowed then the younger parents who were home, who were working either other shifts or whatever, to put their child in the car, if they're preschool, and bring them down to the station and then be available for the response. It may not be simultaneous. It may not get the truck out the door in 1 minute. But I think one of the things that we're missing is no matter what age, no matter what's there, I think there's always a job within the volunteer fire department that someone might be willing to provide that is not necessarily that frontline firefighter. And in doing so, it takes that extra burden off of the folks who are those dedicated individuals who make the day-to-day fire runs or the every night fire runs or EMS runs that are a part of their community.
Let's go back and talk some more about the guys who ride the big red trucks. How do you deal with the guys who get trained for free or cheap with a volunteer program, and then they just jump ship to a paid department?
You're never going to stop that situation. My department that I was on for 27 years and went to the rank of assistant chief on, we always considered ourselves a training department. We were a combination, initially, a few career and volunteers, and then went, to career, part-time and volunteers. Our training was no different for whether the person was a volunteer or a career firefighter. They eventually got a firefighter 2 card and they were there. So that gave them the opportunity and the experience, because we were always a very high volume fire and EMS department.
From a purely emotional point of view, isn't that a little frustrating to put that kind of effort into training someone knowing that they're likely to jump ship when they get a chance?
Well, yeah, it may be, but my thought is if you can get 3 or more years of experience to an individual, you've got that person at least for 3 or so years. That's been about the average time that departments that I have had have retained a person before they go on to a career department. That does mean that coming through the door, you have to have more and more people. But at the same time, they're using that, they're dedicating their time towards a career that they want to do as well. I don't have any long-term heartache over that. I know that those men and women who are coming through the door will serve a community as well as they have served mine. That's part of the whole thing that you have to get over and say, okay, I've had these people for 3 years or so, and now they're going on. Let me give you another example, Scott. One of the departments that I was chief of, we used college students who were, you know, in the local area because of the colleges that were around us, and we trained them. Yes, some of those folks, after graduation, went back to their own community. They either retained their volunteer status or they went on to career positions. I have no heartache with that. It's basically a situation where we've gotten them for that period of time that they were in college, and at the same time, we've trained somebody pretty well that they can go on with a little extra, you know, touches on how this department or that department does operations. And we know we've provided the community where they either came from or are going to for another job with a well-trained, you know, well-equipped, really smart firefighter that will be of, you know, good stead with another community. We did that, as a matter of fact, not only on a regular basis, but we actually started that program with a Federal SAFER Act, a FEMA SAFER Grant Act, and it has been highly successful. And a number of the people who were in that program are still working as volunteers in the community where I served as chief.
So what you're saying is you have to go into it with the mindset that they may well not be around, but you'll get what you can out of them for the time they're there.
I think that's not only the case, Scott, but I think we have to realize that our entire population in the country is pretty mobile. You know, we used to have the person who worked at the auto plant or, you know, worked in the school district for 25 years or 30 years. That's not the case anymore. Our workforce is very, very fluid. They're going to go where the better opportunities are. And, you know, that's not a problem if you realize that, you know, that that may occur. I think our mobility as a population is one of the things that folks haven't gotten over. You know, you don't live necessarily in the same community for 20 years. It's basically, you know, there for maybe four or five, and they, you know, if they're in a software or an IT business, they then go on to, you know, to something else, you know, in that field, but with another company. And so, you know, that's just one of the things that we have to look at and live with and really get over the heartburn of, well, I've trained this guy or gal, and now, you know, 3 or 4 years later, they're leaving me for another job. That's absolutely acceptable in my mind because of the volunteer status that they have. They just pick up and move on. And that's the best thing for their family, which is obviously their first priority. So get over that. You know, understand that in some cases, departments, especially busy departments, are going to become training departments, even as volunteers. But you're training someone who's going to give you, you know, probably 3 to 5 years in your department, and then move on and hopefully volunteer in the community that they're settling in now and become a really good asset for that department as well.
Okay, Robert Relak, thanks for joining me this week on Code 3.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it, Scott. Hope to be able to do it again. And, you know, if folks are interested, just for them to know that we do a monthly column at firechief.com or firerescue1.com, and we tackle a lot of these issues. So, you know, I hope that they might take the opportunity to look up those past issues and the ones that will be coming out in the future.
Thanks, and we'll be looking for those, and we'll put a link to those on our website at code3podcast.com.
Appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, and I know a couple dozen of you do, help me out and leave a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps others find us. That's all for this week. I'm Scott Orr. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, we'll see you later.
Code 3 is a production of Enchanted Sky Media. To get in contact with us, visit code3podcast.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. Don't miss an episode. Find us at the Apple iTunes Store, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.